Tell the people what you're here for.
Bring everything out closer to the people.
We got to stop it, brother. Let's get together and unify.
Trouble.
The oppressed person will fight back.
2-4-3
Radio Basics.
And there's always a message involved.
Greetings, Toronto. This is CHOY. You're listening to the program Radio Basics. We are the radio wing of Basics for Community newsletter. It's Monday, July 16th, and today's show is dedicated to a true patriot, revolutionary, and a visionary for all of humanity, a fallen hero and a soldier. Shirukuri Rajkumar, also known as Comrade Azad to millions in India. On July 1st, 2010, a special police branch of the Indian state executed the spokesperson of the Communist Party of India, Maoist Shirukuri Rajkumar, or as he was known to millions, Comrade Azad. Along with Comrade Azad, Hem Chandra Pandey, a freelance journalist accompanying him, was also executed. Both victims were tortured and executed and their bodies dropped and left in a distant forest. The assassination of the Maoist leader Azad comes at a time when the Indian military is waging the most brutal counterinsurgency in its history, Operation Green Hunt. Under the banner of countering terrorism, the Indian state is in fact waging a massive and brutal war of plunder against the rural Adivasi peoples whose lands are rich in mineral resources. Operation Green Hunt has turned the whole of India into a war zone and hurled an unrestrained brutality of 250,000 paramilitary and police forces against the people. India has a long, long history of heroic popular resistance to the relentless exploitation of foreign imperialist powers and their local reactionary puppets. The glorious struggle of independence against the domination of British colonialism eventually led to the colonial rule in India being defeated. But India has never actually attained true independence, true national liberation and economic independence, which is what the Communist Party of India Maoist is fighting for. In a statement put out by the Central Committee of the Communist Party of India Maoist, of which Comrade Azad was a member, it was written that Comrade Azad was, quote, known for his simple life and hard work, voracious reading and brilliant analyses of situations, crystal clear articulation and sharp logic, and fine organizational skills. He contributed widely to the revolutionary movement in many spheres. In his death, the Indian Revolutionary Movement lost an exemplary comrade and a shining star who served the movement for more than 3.5 decades. Close quote. So to this revolutionary leader of not only the Indian people, but all those who struggle for liberation from the forces of corporate plunder, feudal and capitalist exploitation, and for a brighter future of economic, political, and social liberation, Comrade Azad, this next song coming up is for you. And to our listeners, stay tuned on Radio Basics today. We're going to be playing a radio documentary, which will a feature-length radio documentary that will be exploring the nature of events unfolding in India today, the Maoist movement that Comrade Azad was a part of and was a leader among, and the current counterinsurgency being waged against the rural peoples of India. So stay tuned for that. In the meantime, to Comrade Azad and all the freedom fighters out there, this song is for y'all.
It's from the revolutionary Turkish musician Sadabak Chan, persecuted by the Turkish military for lending her voice to the struggle of oppressed people. It's the 1973 hit Insi Insi, which you may recognize from most deaths more recent, Super Magic.
India.
Black aversion crush me out of dopeness. Death me out of dopeness. Death another opens. Knock off this set, Brooklyn. We keep them open.
The heavens expand. The stars of God. The boogie man.
Hold your hand, healing power like bang. Snap our refugees, bitches. We know the truth, you can't confuse me, bitches. Great name, greater than all your riches. God darn safe, Black Obey, that's the business. Repeat, I rebuke these bitches. We know the truth, you can't confuse me, bitches. Strong magic to bust for you with your Cherokee chief. Rock up on your rocket, no stopping, let's get it. Yeah.
Mashallah.
You're now rocking with the devil. Feel so real. Super magic, black origin, fresh me out of dopeness. Step me out of dopeness, catch another opus. Lock off yourself, Brooklyn, we keep them open. Again, again. Super magic, black origin, fresh me out of dopeness. Step me out of dopeness, catch another opus. Lock off yourself, come close and get them open. Get it here, let it go.
Your community radio,
CHRY
105.5.
Radio Basics, and we're back. In June 2009, the Indian government banned the Communist Party of India Maoist as a terrorist organization under the Unlawful Activities Prevention Act. A few years earlier, in 2006, Indian Prime Minister Manmohan Singh referred to the Naxalites, a common name for the Maoists in India, as, quote, the single biggest internal threat and challenge ever faced by our country, close quote. But whose country exactly is being threatened by the Maoists? Whose Communist Party and People's Liberation Guerrilla Army claim a working class and peasant ideology, and who have the support and are practically one with the millions of rural peoples throughout the vast, vast swaths of territory of Southeast India. For over 40 years, the Maoists have been building their strength in India since the massive peasant rebellion of Naxal Bari in West Bengal in 1967. The Maoists are fighting for an India free of imperialist economic domination and feudal exploitation, and for a country pursuing an independent course of socialist economic development to uplift the exploited and impoverished hundreds of millions in India. So whose country is threatened by the Maoists? In whose hands is today's India? This is the topic of an audio documentary you are about to hear. This is Maoist India, The Search for Economic Justice.
This is Free Speech Radio News for Friday, December 25th. From New York, I'm Dorian Marina. In most places around India, Maoists are an underground hit-and-run force. But in central India's Bastar forests, they're well entrenched. Join us today for an encore presentation of Maoist India, The Search for Economic Justice. In 2009, witnessed a series of attacks by Indian Maoists on state security forces. And now India's central government is hitting back with a counterinsurgency operation known in the media as Operation Green Hunt. The official anti-Maoist campaign includes the deployment of some 75,000 police and paramilitary forces across a swath of territory known as the Red Corridor. Human rights activists fear the operation will largely target the indigenous rural poor who live in mineral-rich areas, and that it could resemble the scorched earth campaign used by the Sri Lankan military to defeat the Tamil Tiger rebels. In 2006, FSRN's Vinod K. Jose traveled to the base areas of the Maoist rebels in central India. Today, we bring you an encore presentation of the documentary Maoist India, The Search for Economic Justice.
We
with 1.1 billion people, India is the world's second largest populated country. With an 8% economic growth, India is also the world's second fastest growing economy. 900 million people, or 80% of India's population, live on just $2 a day. Chhattisgarh is located in central India and is one of the worst affected areas. Poverty, starvation deaths, and malnutrition are everyday realities. And this region also has a strong base for India's Maoist rebellion. A long call. Thousands assemble for the mass Maoist rallies. Maoists are growing in popularity. They have been effective in organizing the poor peasantry and indigenous people to guerrilla warfare by launching strikes at Indian security forces to big mining corporations. Kirandul is a very small town. A town known to the outside world for its mining industries. The irony is that India's poorest regions are also the richest in vital natural resources, notably iron, coal, and diamonds. These minerals are mostly sent to Europe, US, and Japan. The mining industries work non-stop in Kirandul. Inside the forest, clusters of poor villages exist without roads, communication, cables or electricity. Maoist guerrillas in uniform govern these villages. Each village falls under an area committee of Communist Party of India Maoists, or popularly called Maoists. They have their own judicial system called People's Courts, law enforcing agencies, schools, doctors, and a tax collecting department. It is a government that is completely parallel to the government of India. It is also a war zone. The Indian security forces carry out occasional raids, and when they fail to find Maoist guerrillas, they carry out violence in the villages. They burn down houses, kill civilians, and even rape women. Just an hour before I reached the village Pumpat, the Indian army had carried out an attack. Malli's husband, Budru, was killed an hour ago in front of her. She also witnessed her home set on fire. The entire village mourned Budru's death. They covered his body with a red flag, even though he wasn't a Maoist. The villagers believed he was a martyr, and the red flag is a sign of honoring his martyrdom. Villagers sympathize with Maoists, and a majority of them are open about it, even when they face violence from occasional army raids. A villager, Uvam Paki.
Korku metki posposoyam toru gundaloru narge lotkiyam toru.
Why is the army doing this to us? Where was the government all the time when we were starving and dying? Now, when the Maoists are helping us to live with some self-respect, the landlords, police, and army come heavily on us and kill us in the name of tackling Maoism. Yes, it is true. We support Maoists. We harbor them in our villages. They take up our issues and fight injustice. We consider them better people than the government, and they deliver better than the government.
The senior Maoist leader in this zone is Ganesh Uike. The Indian government has declared ₹500,000 on his head. After walking for 80 miles in the forest, I met Ganesh on the third day.
लोकतांत्रिक डेमोक्रेटिक अधिकार जो लाने के लिए हमारा नौशा है. तो इसके लिए हम लोग मूवमेंट के लिए.
Our fight is to bring justice and to establish a people's democracy. What is democracy when people are not fed? When people are discriminated against? We have political morality on our side, so we are sure we will win the people's war. But we are not bringing people toward us at gunpoint. That is what's being propagated by the government through its corporate media. But ask the villagers. They will tell you how we become popular. Is it by winning hearts or with guns?
You are fighting against a nuclear power. How can you win this war militarily?
पॉलिटिकली हम समझते हैं कि इसलिए जितना भी अमेरिका हो या
नो न्यूक्लियर स्टेट कैन विदस्टैंड अ जेन्युइन पीपल्स अपराइजिंग फॉर चेंज. You don't need to be a Maoist to be optimistic. At least that is what history tells us. Vietnam is such a small country when you compare it to the U.S. But the U.S. finally lost to popular opinion. And the U.S. thought it could tame Iraq in a year's time. It's going to be 4 years now. The U.S. can't even control Baghdad City. Forget about the rest of the country. Likewise, we believe that since we have popular support, we can bring revolution in India, and a Maoist one in that.
जरूर हराएंगे.
गणेश उइके इज ए पोस्ट ग्रेजुएट इन केमिस्ट्री. ही जॉइंड द माओइस्ट मूवमेंट 30 इयर्स अगो. माओइज्म इज आल्सो नोन इन इंडिया एज नक्सलिज्म एंड माओइस्ट आर कॉल्ड नक्सलाइट्स. 40 इयर्स अगो ए पेसेंट रेबेलियन स्टार्टेड इन द ईस्टर्न इंडियन स्टेट ऑफ बंगाल इन ए विलेज कॉल्ड नक्सलबारी एंड द वर्ड नक्सलाइट ओरिजिनेटेड फ्रॉम द नेम ऑफ द विलेज. During the Cold War period, the Naxalites witnessed heavy repression due to fears that India would turn red. Vijay Singh is a historian.
The party then was subjected to terrible repressions, and the state machinery was used to assassinate thousands of young youth. Some people say 10,000 people were killed by the state forces. Others say that 20,000 were killed. Some even say 30,000.
But mass killings did not ensure elimination of Maoist ideology. It slowly resurrected in different parts of India again, this time with more popular mass organizations and a better equipped military. The realities of poverty, the caste system, feudalism and unemployment provided the right political climate for Maoists to gain people's support. According to last year's government estimates, the People's Guerrilla Army consists of over 15,000 trained men and women with another 40,000 strong people's militia. And the Maoists have a presence in 200 of India's 602 districts, a red corridor down a swathe of central India from the border with Nepal in the Himalayas to the southern state at the Indian Ocean, Karnataka. And this covers close to a third of India's landmass. Hariram is the commander of a local guerrilla squad or LGS, which consists of 100 villages.
Militarily, we are growing like never before. Some 20 years ago, we did not have enough locals in the guerrilla squad. Now more and more people say they wanted to join the guerrilla squad. The demand from the youth in the villages is overwhelming. We divert them to mass organization work. Our aim is not to build a strong army alone. Our aim is also to build democratic societies wherever we function. You can see how we have done developmental works in the area like mud dams, bridges, and wells. In the summer, we suffer from devastating droughts, an after effect of your so-called civilized governments not signing the Kyoto Protocol, and so on. Governments don't do anything to tackle the drought. In my area alone, our guerrilla squad made some 40 big wells last year.
The percentage of women Maoists have also increased. Well-trained women lead guerrilla attacks against the Indian security forces. Nirmala is one of them. When she was 20 years old, she was drawn towards human rights issues. She was influenced by a medical doctor in her village. The doctor used to talk about revolutionary politics. She supported a frontal organization of Maoists, and for 14 years later, she's in the underground squad. Nirmala is adored as a firebrand guerrilla and has led squads in a number of military operations.
Whenever I hold up the gun against the enemies, my dream is social equality, and my sense of justice gives me courage and inspiration. I think it is true with any revolutionary.
What is the presence of women in your party?
30% of the guerrilla army are women. When women hold up half the sky, we want to have the same representation in the Maoist party as well. As of now, it is one-third, which is much better than your so-called mainstream politics in parliament, which is only less than 10% women representation.
What changes have you made in lives of the women?
The forceful marriage was the first issue that we started with. The traditional arranged marriages are against womanhood. Most of the time, women are handed over from one home to another, like objects. It was the Maoist women wing who took up the issue first. We started as a house-to-house campaign, and soon it became a movement. Now we don't have any forced marriages in our area. The second issue we took up was violence against women. Then equal wages. Women never used to get equal wages as men. Now they get equal wages. Then we concentrated on education, which can provide empowerment.
The Israeli army confirmed an operation was underway. India has asked its 12,000 nationals in Lebanon to be ready to move out of the war.
The most popular media among the Maoists are radio. None of them miss the bulletins in the local language of All India Radio, the state-owned radio, and the only radio service in India. Each guerrilla has one radio set in their knapsack. During my interview with senior leader Ganesh Uike, he quickly realized it was time for the evening news. Majority of the airtime is dominated by Maoists. Today's news was on a guerrilla action Maoists carried out 100 miles from here at a security force post and how they took away with them weapons and ammunition. The radio said more than 800 Maoists took part in the operation. The state-owned radio then carried reactions from all mainstream political parties, which consider the Maoists terrorists. Ganesh Uike.
The impressions of middle-class people who live in the cities and haven't seen us are influenced by state propaganda like this. They think we're extremists or terrorists. If we were terrorists, do you think hundreds of people would have come with us even in a small operation like raiding a security post? Believe me, thousands are ready to join the guerrillas to do bigger actions than that. Why are people motivated? Because they believe in it. It is a genuine people's uprising. If you want to call it terrorism, you do it, but you are ignoring the issues we raise.
One of the issues the Maoists raise in this area is mining. Extraction of natural resources beat enormous revenue for the corporations. But for the local community, they continue to live in poor conditions and are facing different health hazards. This river used to have a name, but the new generation has forgotten the old name. Because in their lifetime, they haven't seen the river in any other color than thick red. And they call it Red River. The waste from the mining areas are dumped in this river, giving it a red color. Now the villagers have to travel miles to get water from wells. Dr. Binayak Sen is with the People's Union of Civil Liberties or PUCL of a nearby town.
The people of Bastar have not benefited one iota from all the mineral exploitation that has gone on since the last 50 years. But the people have remained, the poverty of the people has remained where it was. So now the people are saying that they want a different exploitation regime in which the genuine interests of the people are kept foremost and they are refused to be exploited in this way anymore.
Mining companies are growing big. Television channels declared India was soon going to be a world power. But Booker-winning writers like Arundhati Roy are worried what would happen to the whopping poor.
The number of farmer suicides cross about 30,000. And that too, in that number, you know, women are not counted because they're not farmers, because they have no land in their names. And of course, this kind of, I mean, these huge numbers of suicide are only the tip of the iceberg of what is an agricultural economy that's being garroted. You know that there are millions of people living in a rural economy, and not a corporate rural economy, a community-based, small, broken, subsistence rural economy. You know, these people who want India to be a world power want to eliminate the poor. They would like the suicide rate to increase. So us bleating about it isn't going to help very much, you know. The ruthlessness of that is something we have to face because all of us are always arguing to some you know, some sort of utopian, kind humanitarian court, but that doesn't exist. There are people who are saying, well, too bad, you know. So what will happen? How, on what basis will we become, we, I don't know, I mean, will India become a superpower? How is it going to drag this mass of poor people along to the global high table? You know, I don't know.
Poverty is rampant in this mineral-rich area. This household has not had anything to eat for the entire day. It is already 4 in the evening. Senior Maoist leader Ganesh Uike is very clear who his enemies are.
The government, they're not democratic. They protect people who loot resources and call them businessmen. They bring foreign predatory capital and call it investments. They pass legislation which facilitates the looting and call it reforms. We cannot accept a state which is anti-people.
Maoists have a new problem to tackle now. A section of civilians are fielded against them. Villages closer to the landlords and police informers are taken in custody by the security forces, recruited as special police officers or SPOs, and given training to fight the Maoists. Often they fall short of encountering Maoists face to face, but attack the villagers who support the Maoists. They burn down villages and farms to make Maoists unpopular. Civil liberty activists estimates in the first half of this year alone, over 300 villagers are killed by the counter-Maoist insurgents called Salwa Juthum. Nukku Badri's house was burned by Salwa Juthum.
The Salwa Juthum gangs do not come alone. They are accompanied by hundreds of army men. In fact, the Salwa Juthum men are fielded as human shields in front of the security forces. They come and destroy everything. Their intention is to terrorize us. They come and kill point blank if they get a hold of us. So when we hear them climbing down the hills, we run away to the deep forest. We stay there until the army and Salwa Juthum go back. In frustration of not being able to kill any of us, they burn down our houses and crops.
According to a Koya tribal myth, Tuldokri, a god they worship, ran away from Pumpad village because there were plenty of mosquitoes. And they were deadly mosquitoes that took away people's lives. Now these followers are running away in fear of life from Salwa Juthum and Indian security forces. And when they find their villages is burned down entirely, work begins to build an entirely new village. Cutting trees and building single room sheds, that is home for them. They keep goats, cows and other animals with them. Not a very healthy scene. People regularly contract malaria, dengue and TB. Thati Somli is 55 years old and she is from Palmar village. Her daughter was raped and killed 2 months ago by Salwa Juthum insurgents.
Salwa Juthum and security forces raided our village. One day in the dark, all of us ran scared into the forest. My daughter also ran off to escape, but she fell into a ditch and could not escape from there. They raped her and killed her, and they brought her naked body, tying it onto long sticks like a hunted animal, and placed her at our village and then left. They are animals.
Oyam Aiti is lucky that she did not get killed after being raped. But she says her life was spoiled after the incident.
I was working in the field when I got a message that my father was unwell and I had to reach home immediately. I ran to my home, but on the way, special police officers and Salwa Juthum people saw me running and took me forcefully to the nearest camp of the armed force. The Central Reserve Police Force men tortured me very badly. They wanted information on Maoists. Then the officers ordered to dump me back at my village. And on the way, these men in uniform raped me at Gangalore village. It was a gang rape, 5 of them. I was almost dead. Some villagers came and took me to the hospital. I spent many days in the hospital.
It rained non-stop for the next 2 days. The river overflowed and causing floods in some of the villages.
people were happy to receive good rain. It was also the beginning of a new agricultural cycle. Bulls plow the land. Wooden blades tied between the shoulders of two bulls are pressed on the soil, and this prepares the land to sow rice. Civil liberties activists think the government is doing something terribly wrong in their attempt to destroy the popularity of Maoists. The violent repression of villagers shows how cruel the state can be to their citizens. State violence can only help Maoists gain acceptance among the people. Nandita Haksar is a senior Supreme Court lawyer and civil liberties activist. She thinks the demands of Maoists are democratic and the state should not use violence.
Their demands are basically enforcement of minimum wages, statutory minimum wages, and they are demands which are really part of the Constitution of India. They are not enforceable demands, but they are part of what are called the directive principles of state policy. So the question is, that why do we need a militant movement to enforce legal rights of people or to enforce citizenship rights of people? So obviously there is something lacking in it, and it is a question of all political democracy. It offers political democracy, not economic democracy.
The Maoists continue to be banned under different legislations. Until recently, they were banned under the controversial new terrorism legislation formed after 9/11 called POTA, or Prevention of Terrorism Act. And not just by the Indian government. Even the United States is concerned about the growing popularity of the Maoists in the countrysides. The U.S. Department of State included the Indian Maoists in the list of banned terrorist organizations. The U.S. ambassador to India has always been quick in offering the FBI help every time a major Maoist strike is reported. They have also chosen areas near the Maoists for joint military exercises with India. Advocate Nandita Haksa.
I would say that it's against international relations or basis of international relations that the U.S. ambassador is interfering in entirely internal affairs of the country. On the other hand, the U.S. has been promoting such economic policies and encouraging WTO to impose unfair terms of trade, which has led to large-scale poverty. So this is the problem, that they do not see the basis of such movements, and they have used the war against terror to actually call any dissent and political movements terrorists in their attempt to build up a so-called enemy called the global terrorism.
Maoists are best at using folk songs to communicate with the villagers. Even in the age of television and movies, folk theatre has a convincing presence in rural India. Gaddar is a revolutionary ballad. Many call him the most popular cultural activist in rural India. Thousands assemble to watch Gaddar's performance, which is usually done late in the evenings. With candles and torches, poor people walk miles to listen to Gaddar's performance. Gaddar uses an experimental form of theatre with folk songs and dances to communicate his radical ideas.
Salute to the martyrs who died fighting for our minimum wages. Salute to the radicals who dreamt of a revolutionary world. The battle is not yet complete. It is left on us to fight for an egalitarian world.
The private army of the landlords try to kill Gaddar. He still has four bullets stuck inside his spinal cord, which are unable to be removed. He is 65, but still sings and dances in the villages. Like any left organization in the third world, the Indian Maoists have a strong anti-American stance. They identify corporate aggression, WTO policies, World Bank conditions, and unemployment to the economic policies promoted by the U.S. administration. Gaddar sings it.
Hey friends, see, the Americans are getting angry. Look at the American administration. They are really angry at you. If our government gives subsidies to our farmers, the American government is angry. If we restrict American products in our markets, they get angry again. Where is this America situated? Is it on the other side of the globe? No, it is right there in your homes. It is in the form of toilet soap brands, toothpaste, shaving creams, and now Coca-Cola and Pepsi. Americans get angry if we boycott these products. They will get angry if our unemployed youth protest. America is synonymous with capitalism.
This is the thing. Kapara America! Are Rexona Sobun Banke?
Capitalism is the enemy. American administration is the proponent of capitalism. If anyone asks you what is your qualification, you will tell them high school first class, graduation first class, post-graduation first class, PhD first class, and you still can't find a job. Capitalism is the enemy of humanism. We have to defeat it.
From the forests and countryside to university campuses, Maoism is growing in India. Even if we don't see a Maoist takeover in the immediate future, the Indian countrysides are sending a strong message to the world that the people are really unhappy and agitated. For FSRN, from the central and eastern Indian states, this is Vinod K. Jules.
Listening to CHRY 105.5 FM, broadcasting at 158 watts at 105.5 FM, on the World Wide Web at chry.fm, and on the Rogers Digital Network, channel 945.
Skinhead, deadhead, everybody gone by. Situation.
pardon me for the technical difficulties. That was They Don't Really Care About Us by a man who I'm certain needs no introduction for any of our listeners out there. An appropriate song for the evening, given our discussion and the radio documentary we were listening to regarding the rural rebellion in India and the brutal counterinsurgency campaign that's being conducted against it by the Indian state, trained by the Israel's Mossad, provided with strategic intelligence, supported by the United States, in an effort to crush a rural rebellion that is demanding an end to imperialist exploitation, the plunder of minerals and the natural wealth of that country, and the domination and oppression of its people. And again, reminding our listeners that earlier in the show that we were paying tribute to a fallen hero, Comrade Azad, who was a leader of the revolutionary movement in the rural parts of India, the south and eastern states. Moving on to the next track, Radio Basics, we'll be back in a minute. This is this track is Africa Must Wake Up by Nas and Damian Marley, with featuring Kanan off the new album, Distant Relatives. Check it out.
distant relatives. We're all distant relatives, no matter where you're from, where you live, how near, how far. Africa, China, Japan, Afghanistan, Israel. We're all fam, we're all distant relatives. So that's why we came together. One of the reasons myself and Damien came together. Cause we all come from one place, and that's Africa. That's right, you too, and you, the whole world. We all family, we just spread out all over the place. So to all my distant relatives, let's take a day home.
Well, Africa must wake up, sleeping sons of Jacob, for what tomorrow may bring, may a better day come. Yesterday we were kings, can you tell me, young ones, who are we today? Well, Africa must wake up, sleeping sons of Jacob, for what tomorrow may bring, may a better day come. Yesterday we were kings, can you tell me, young ones, who are we today?
A better life in our home countries, where we were told that privatizing water and electricity would make things run more efficiently. Instead, the quality remained almost the same, and the price was increased until it became an unaffordable luxury. Some corporations are more efficient than government, but their motivation is not the health or well-being of the people. It's only about profit. Everything else, their image, their human resources, their public relations only exist to protect the reality behind it. Once upon a time, we were told that nationalization would prevent growth by limiting competition, that our countries were nothing without the companies that invested in us. And so they privatized everything. Everything in our country was owned by people that had no connection to our culture, by those who never had our interest at heart. They didn't care about our survival or well-being. They just wanted to turn a profit by raping the land, by exploiting our people, our industry, and our resources. They took everything we built and made it theirs. First, by creating racism to justify slavery, building the capital for capitalism. And then, when they gave us what they called liberty, everything we had was still owned by them. Governments told us that socialism was the real enemy and that we would have freedom, but the foreign powers and corporations were the ones with the real freedom, the freedom to take all the wealth generated by our work and our land and give us only a small percentage of the scraps from the table. Their lust for power and their greed drove them to betray not only us, but themselves and the word of their own God. And while some used missionaries and donations to offset this abuse, other countries and companies were blatant with their crimes, using war, disease, and sanctions that killed millions. They supported corrupt governments that were almost like the old slave masters in their repression of the people, because their loyalty was to those who enabled them, installed them, and kept them in power. They became the bastard children of American industry, kleptocracies, governments of thievery. They protected the corporate and went to war against their own people to preserve those profits. The puppet rulers were given billions of U.S. tax dollars to fund civil wars, right-wing death squads, execute political dissidents, sympathetic clergy, and even overthrow democratically elected governments. And so the age of revolution began again. They painted it as godless terrorists versus the free world and the free market. But the free market has never been free, because the market
that does not regulate itself. It is manipulated like a puppet, and it survives because of its image. Destroy the image and the enemy will die. Such is the same in the rap industry, for the major label superpowers treat the underground like the third world. When they need new assets, new artists to prostitute or sign and put on the shelf to use their songs. When they needed new concepts, music and publishing to steal from producers, they came to the underground, to the third world. They took our culture, our property and our industry and our resources, even using our own people to help them exploit us. But behind the mask of efficiency, they claim that we need to succeed. They're no better than us. Their economic advertisement was always a lie. A few got rich, but most were given an illusion of wealth, almost as if it was designed for failure. Opportunity comes at the price of the soul and the music. So remember what they are underneath the fancy architecture, glitter and rented jewelry, the cars, the IMF loans, the seeds with suicide genes, 20-year contracts and oil blood money. Build your defenses, my independent brothers and sisters. They'll stop at nothing to get what they want. They paint the third world underground as savage and backward, but the superpowers are no less corrupt. They've just learned to disguise it better, cause they fix elections too. They embezzle tax money. They go to war for resources. They fund terrorism for their own benefit. And when there's enough at stake, history's taught us that they'll even assassinate their own presidents.
Think represents man's finest aspirations in the field of science and technology. So too does the struggle of the Afghan people represent man's highest aspirations for freedom. I am dedicating, on behalf of the American people, the March 22nd launch of the Columbia to the people of Afghanistan.
That was Open Your Eyes by Immortal Technique. This is Radio Basics. I'm your host for tonight, Steve De Silva. And before I sign off, I just want to thank all our listeners who tune in on a weekly basis. I was very pleasantly surprised to meet one of our regular listeners over the weekend at a community event on police brutality and racial profiling held downtown at the Ontario Institute for Studies and Education. And the sister, Audrey, who listens in every week, approached me and said that she's a listener and she really appreciates what we're doing. And it means a lot that we have listeners out there who are supportive of the work of Radio Basics, but also, you know, a campus community radio station like CHRY, which gets by through the support of its listeners. And we here at Radio Basics, we're the radio wing of Basics Free Community Newsletter, which is a people's newspaper, a working class people's newspaper, which gets by as well through the support of its listeners, through the active work of its membership, and which has as its goal and aspirations to build a paper that truly serves the interests of working class people in Toronto and eventually throughout Canada. And so we thank all our listeners, all our supporters of Radio Basics and Basics Free Community Newsletter. Thank you very much. You know, Basics is not a professional endeavor. It's a paper for the people. So if you believe that there is a newspaper that that the media should serve the people, should speak to the interests of the people, but that it doesn't, the monopoly in corporate media does not do that, contact us, get involved with us, help us produce our paper, help us write for our paper, and help us distribute our paper, most importantly. I'm here at Radio Basics. You can contact me by email at basics.canada@gmail.com, and let us know what you think. Check out our website, basicsnews.ca, for more information. Signing off for tonight, this is Steve Silva on Radio Basics. We'll see you next week and every week, Monday to 8 to 9 p.m. Much love, Toronto. Much respect. We're out.
People, what you're here for.
We got to stop it, brother. Let's get together and unify.
Trouble, 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 trouble.
An oppressed person will fight back.
2-4-3
Radio Basics.
And there's always a message involved.